So for the last 6 weeks, we've been talking about this, just seeing unexpected things that Jesus does in the pages of Scripture. In particular, there's four books in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that kind of tell the Jesus story. All right, it's people who hung out. It's not somebody that just heard about the story, but it's eyewitnesses that hung out with Jesus, and they just began to document after his death, burial, resurrection, and ascension back to heaven. These guys just begin to think back on their experience and begin to document the things that they saw and the things that they heard Jesus do. And as we begin to read their stories, you know, and we look at four different people's perspective of the same time period, you know, there's certain things that stick out from one writer other than, you know, differently from another. But there's a lot of stories that all four of them just kind of pick up on. And it's interesting as you read these stories, and sometimes if you just find yourself captivated in the nuances of the story. And what I mean by that is if instead of just reading the story like me, maybe you're like me, and I've been going to Bible school for longer I can remember, all right? So we changed the name to Summer Blast because Vacation Bible School is not all that cool anymore. So we call it Summer Blast because it's a blast and it's in the summer. But I've been going to these things since I was, you know, younger than I can even remember. And sometimes the stories that we find in the Bible just become mundane and familiar. So those of us who actually get out our Bibles and read, sometimes we read, we just brush right across the story, and we miss the significance and the finer details of what happens. And so throughout this series, we've just kind of looked at things that were just really unexpected. Either they catch us off guard, or they caught the people who were around them off guard. I mean, like Jesus being called a friend of sinners. You know, they call him a glutton and a drunkard. I think like New King James is like wine bibber or some word like that. I don't even know what that means, but a drunkard and a glutton. It's like Jesus hung out with the wrong people for the religious crowd. That's like kind of surprising to us, especially if you're like me and you grew up with a very, very rural Southern Baptist upbringing. It's like Jesus at a party. I just can't imagine that, right? It's just unexpected. There he was. And in fact, he even goes and turns water into wine at a wedding. And that just messed up all the Southern Baptists, right? I mean, like when I grew up, we just changed the Bible at that point and said Jesus made grape juice. You know, I mean, we just changed the whole Bible. It's like we can't deal with that. We don't even know what to do with that. And so Jesus made grape juice, and that's what we'll serve at the Lord's Supper. Amen. So that's just kind of the way we went with it. And then, I mean, Jesus does all kind of crazy things. I mean, it seems like to us. I mean, one day he's traveling, and when the rest of his culture would go around Samaria, he goes right through it, engages with a Samaritan woman, and just, I mean, absolutely affects her life in ways that nobody would have ever expected. And on and on and on through the pages of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus just keeps catching us by surprise. As we get toward the end of the Gospels, and each one of them, they begin to tell us a story that they all have in common. It's this story where Jesus is in a garden, and he gets arrested, and he's drugged through the mockery of a trial, and he's accused of blasphemy, and he's sentenced to death. And on a cross, he gives his life as a ransom for many. I mean, we watch as the Roman government, puts him to death. But we know as we read the rest of the story that Jesus is a willing sacrifice, paying the price for our mistakes, paying the price for our rebellion, our sin. And then the most remarkable thing happens is just as all hope is lost, just as it begins to sink in that, my goodness, this guy that we thought was the man, the Messiah, the myth, the legend, just the guy we thought was coming for us, just as it began to sink in that maybe this was it and they were wrong, up from the ground he arose, right? And the song, I think, says, with a triumph over his foes, right? And Jesus miraculously resurrects from the dead, and all of human history is split in half. At that moment, everything changes as he authenticates and verifies everything that he said is now accurate. Because the resurrection says, if you can resurrect yourself, And you rise from the dead under your own power, then everything you've said up until that point is authenticated, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. So we're pretty sure you're the Messiah. You're raised from the dead. There's no question. And this movement kind of begins that we now embrace. Now we're here because of what started at the resurrection. And as we read through that story, John. And in the book of John, I love John. If you're new to Christianity, or if you're old to Christianity, and you're just looking for something to do, you're like, I don't want to know where to start, or I'm looking for something, go to the book of John and just begin to read slowly, verse by verse, John's story about Jesus. And the reason I love the book of John is because John hardly ever calls himself I. You ever been around that person that talks in third person? Anybody ever do that? I mean, it's kind of an odd person, right? If you get around a guy that talks about himself in the form of, in the third person, like, you know, there was this guy and he's talking about himself, it's kind of weird. But John talks in third person the entire book, and he refers to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved. John found his identity. He was enamored with the reality that the thing that most affected him was that he was loved by Jesus. And all throughout this book of John, John writes from the perspective of, let me tell you about a man who loved me more than I could ever imagine, dreamed, or hoped for. And as he begins to write, as he writes Jesus' story, we get to the very last chapter of John. And John tells us a story that has uncanny details in it. He tells us a story that just, it was so life-altering, so life-changing, it so affected him that the details of the story are just, they're unexpected. But more unexpected is what Jesus does in the story. So at this point in the narrative, Jesus has died, he's rose again, and he's appeared to the disciples twice. Now understand this, that at this moment in time, Jesus is not hiding the fact that he is God. All right? I mean, he is resurrected. There's no longer like, is there a question? There's no longer, is Jesus God? Is Jesus man? There is no question anymore. I mean, he does things like the disciples are having dinner and or they're meeting in a room, and Jesus just walks through the wall. All right. Now I'm just saying, like, that could be creepy, right? I mean, if we're like in here today and all of a sudden a guy just kind of walks through the wall, like, I don't know what you do at that point. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, to run, or maybe I shouldn't run. Apparently running is probably not the best option, because if you can walk through walls and I got to run through doors, I'm probably at a disadvantage anyway, right? But, I mean, Jesus is not camouflaging the fact at all that he's God. All right, it is, I have been resurrected. I'm going to be here about 40 days before I go back. He's already revealed himself twice to the disciples. And in this story, this is the third time that Jesus shows up. And I want you to see this story. I want you to imagine. I want you to go back with me. And you got to think about this. Jesus has died. They've heard he's resurrected. They've seen him a couple of times. But these disciples have gone from a daily, moment-by-moment experience with Jesus to, like, Jesus is not there all the time now. You know, he's appeared to them twice and then left. And if you have based your life for 3 years on one person, like these disciples have, then when he's not there every second, sometimes some confusion sets in. And that's exactly where the disciples are. They're like, well, where do we go from here? I mean, we've hung out with this guy every day for 3 years, and now he just kind of walks through walls and pops in and out of our life. I don't really know exactly what to do. And so looking to their leader, Peter, notice what Peter does here. Simon Peter said to them, that's the rest of the disciples, I am going fishing. That's a good plan. Am I right? We got some guys in the room that would agree with that. When you don't know what to do, do what you know to do. Go fishing, right? I mean, Peter just goes, I mean, he's in a place of confusion. He don't really know what this means for him. He don't know what tomorrow looks like. You know, he's like, I was with Messiah. I based my life on him. He died. He rose again. I've seen him a couple of times. Don't know what I'm supposed to do from here. I know what I'll do. I'll go fishing. Now, ironically enough, the reason he's going fishing, he just goes back to what he knows. All right, we know when we met Peter for the first time, Peter was fishing. Jesus finds him, says, hey, Peter. He don't call him by name. He says, hey, guys, y'all caught anything? They're like, no, we fished all night and didn't catch anything. And Jesus goes, well, they don't know who Jesus is at this point. He goes, well, hey, why don't you throw your nets on the other side? Which was a dumb thing to do, all right? It was daytime. In that day and time, you didn't fish in the daytime. You went at night. You certainly didn't throw nets into deep water. You threw nets into shallow water. It's just a dumb thing for Jesus to tell him to do. But nevertheless, Peter, probably thinking, I'm going to show this guy how dumb he is, throws his nets on the other side of the boat. And he hauls in so many fish, the nets begin to tear, and it starts to sink the boat. At which point, Peter goes, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to be with you from now on. All right, which I'm the same way. I go to Gunnersville. I like to fish. I never catch a flipping thing. Hardly ever catch any fish. If I meet a guy who helps me catch so many fish that it sinks my boat, I'm going with that guy. I'm like, hey, there's a tournament this weekend. How interested are you in going? Right? Because that's incredible. And Peter's same way. And that day, Jesus looked at Peter and said, follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. And the story that we hear is that Peter leaves his net, leaves his boat. For 3 years, he follows Jesus. Now Jesus died. Peter knows he's rose. He's seen him twice, but he has no ambition, no idea, no direction. He didn't know what to do. So he says, you know what? I'm going to go fishing. And we know that Peter was a leader because they say to him, well, we'll go with you. So they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Now, let me just tell you, if you're in a place in life where you don't know what to do and life is just confusing and you think to yourself, I know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go back to what I know. I'm going fishing. Then the only way that situation gets any worse is when you go fish all night and you don't catch anything. All right? You don't catch a thing. And in fact, that's exactly what happens. I don't catch anything. And the next thing that happens is just as day was breaking, they're out all night. They don't catch anything. Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples didn't know it was Jesus, probably because he was a long way off, right? He was, we find out later, like 100 yards away. I mean, Jesus probably just looked like another guy. The disciples didn't know it was Jesus, and Jesus says to them, children, do you have any fish? Let me just throw this out. This is not Bible, what I'm about to tell you, but it's just good truth. The worst thing you can ask somebody who hasn't caught fish is, have you caught any fish? All right, you put us in a real awkward situation when we've been fishing all day, and you say, did you catch anything? Wives in the room, if your husband's fish, how about just learn from some context clues when we get home whether we caught anything or not? You know, be sensitive enough to think about, he might not have caught anything and might not want to tell you that we didn't catch anything. People like all the time, like, all you fishermen lie and tell big fish stories. That's because you keep asking. If you'll stop asking, we will quit lying about how many fish we caught and how big they were, right? Because that's a terrible question. If you fish all night, you don't catch anything. You hunt all day and don't kill anything. You go shopping all day and don't buy anything. Actually, that'd be a great idea. But anyway, those other ones, we don't want to be asked about it, right? So here's these guys with their tails tucked between their legs, heads down, Jesus on the shore, children. First of all, don't you know they love that? These are grown men. Jesus calls them kids. Boys, did y'all catch anything? They have to go, no. Thanks for the interest. Appreciate you for bringing that up. We've been fishing all night. We're tired. Like to have a little breakfast. But nah, we'd rather talk to you about how we ain't caught anything. No. And I'm just guessing no was the only thing John thought he could write in what was going to one day be the Bible. There was probably more said on that boat. Like, no was out loud and under their breath, we don't like that you're asking us. They say no. And he says to them, this is the second worst thing you can say to somebody who doesn't catch any fish. He says, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. Number one thing we don't like when we don't catch fish is, did you catch any fish? Second thing is, well, why didn't you use a plastic worm? Why didn't you try a crankbait? Because I didn't think about it. Or I didn't think it would work because I'm stupid. Whichever the answer is, we don't want to have that conversation. Jesus decides to tell them, throw the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. Now, once again, let me remind you, in that day and time, you didn't throw nets in the daytime. Okay? You fished at night, you threw nets at night when fish were more active, when the water was cooler, it brought the fish up to the up in the water column. But for whatever reason, probably Peter being like, let's show this dummy that he don't know what he's talking about, they cast it. And they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. And in the words of what's his name? It was like deja vu all over again, right? Suddenly some things began to click in their head. And these guys were like, we've experienced something like this before. It's like 3 years ago. We were out fishing and we didn't catch anything. Remember that guy? And immediately John's like, that's Jesus. And that's exactly what happens is John begins to look and he goes, oh my goodness. And he says to the other guys in the boat, guys, that's the Lord. That's not just some guy up on there. And you should go back and read this, because I've left some of this out so you could be interested enough to go home and read. But this is crazy. Like, we find out they're about 100 yards from the shore, and the rest of the guys are going to, like, go see Jesus. And John tells us that Peter grabs his shirt, puts it on, his outer garment, jacket, something, puts it on, and jumps in the water and swims to meet Jesus, which had to be a cultural thing, because I would think you would take off clothes to jump in the water and swim to Jesus. Peter felt compelled to put on clothes, jump in the water, and go swim to Jesus. But Peter is so excited because the guy who gave him purpose, the guy who defined his life, the guy who he spent time with, that he grew to love, is on the beach. And Peter says, I can't wait for the boat to get there. I'm going to see Jesus. And he jumps in the water. He swims to see Jesus. And then John and the rest of the disciples pull the boat up. Right? Now, I like to imagine how that had to happen. You know, like in the moment, Peter like grabs his coat, jumps in. And I imagine he's just out there like swimming. And then the boat like pulls up right beside him. You know what I mean? It's like, I can just imagine him like, boy, I'm like, dude, you could have waited on us. You know, it's like that guy that passes you on 431, like spinning in and out of cars and then gets stopped at the same red light with you. Don't you love that? I always like pull up next to that guy. But anyway, that's kind of how I picture this happening. But the insignificant, really awesome thing that happens, what happens as they get to the shore. Check this out. So unexpected. When they got out on the land, they saw a charcoal fire in place, with fish laid out on it and bread. And Jesus said to him, bring some of the fish that you've just caught. I mean, Jesus is there early. He's God. He's making no bones about it. And he begins to think about his guys. Now, I know they ain't gonna catch anything tonight. You know what would be really cool? I'll do that whole fisherman of men thing to him again. You know, you could just almost see Jesus plotting. But this time, he knows they're gonna be out fishing all night. They're gonna be hungry. He gets there early and he cooks breakfast. He just has breakfast ready for them, because sometimes the things that we forget about Jesus is that Jesus doesn't just love us, Jesus likes us. And sometimes we just forget about the fact that breakfast is important to Jesus too. That sometimes the things that just go on in your life, that just is just a part of routine, Jesus even likes the routine. You know, Jesus is just engaged. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I've got two boys, you know that. You know, one's got a birthday this week, like Tuesday. He'll turn 15. My youngest is 15 flipping years old. It's just crazy. I mean, hard for me to get used to. And my boys are growing up. But, you know, I think back to 15 years ago and 17 years ago. You know, when you got a new baby, everything is awesome, right? It's like every little thing is really cool. And it's almost like we forget that our Heavenly Father, this God who died for us, who loves us, is just, he likes the stuff that may seem mundane to us. Even the ordinary is just, he's interested. And he fixed these guys breakfast. I mean, you would think God would have better things to do than fix breakfast, but he fixes breakfast for them this day. And he says, go ahead and bring up some of the fish. And so they do, and they have breakfast together. And Jesus says to him, come and have breakfast. And none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? Because they knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came and took the bread and he gave it to them. And so were the fish. And they just sat together and they had breakfast. And you know, I wasn't there that day, obviously. And I can only imagine what it was like. But I'll bet you this. I bet you there was never another breakfast in their lives that they remembered as much as that breakfast. You know what I mean? I bet you there was nothing that ever happened. There was no, like, they could have gone to the Smoky Mountains, to like the Pancake House, and they wouldn't remember that breakfast better than this breakfast. Right? Because it was on this breakfast was when Jesus just, I mean, he just said, listen, I still got time for you. I mean, he is God. He has proven his message is real. He's proven his story is true. He's everything and more that they expected, and yet he still had time to get there early that morning, fix a little bread. Look, I don't know where you're at in life, and this is not the entire point of the sermon this morning, but I know sometimes you may feel like, you know, God loves me. I'm okay with that. I have a hard time believing he likes me or has time for me. Let me just tell you something. This story reminds us that Jesus likes you, and he has time for you. And whatever it is that's going on in your life, if maybe that's just something you need to embrace today and understand, is that he's got time for me. He's interested in me. Not just, sometimes we fall in this trap that God so loved the whole world that we forget that he also loves me. He likes me. He likes you. And he just proves this to us. And this would be a good enough story. If the story in here, this would be great. We could just talk about how much he likes us. He just goes out of his way. They didn't expect to see him there. And Jesus just manufactured this entire environment opportunity just to engage with the disciples, and that would be good enough. But I want you to see what he takes time to do concerning Peter. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus pulls Peter to the side, and he says to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He says, "Peter, I just want to know something, man. Do you love me more than these other guys?" And Jesus goes, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Well, then, Peter, feed my lambs." He says to him again a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." He says to him, "Then tend my sheep." And then for a third time, he says to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter's grieved, right? Because he's like, "Lord, you know everything. And you know I love you." I mean, Peter's just like, "I don't understand. You keep asking me this. You know I love you. You know everything." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." Now, you may read this story and you may hear this and be like, "Well, it just seems to me like Jesus doesn't speak whatever language that Peter speaks. He keeps asking him three times." But see, this is where sometimes we just brush right across a story and we miss everything that the Holy Spirit of God would love for us to hear. And this past week, we were doing sermon prep for this, and we just stopped and just took some time and just said, just allow the story. Just let the story just kind of seep in and just hear the story. And put yourself there. And for the most part, here's what I want you to remember. I want you to just be there. Just imagine you're Peter. Jesus pulled you over to the side. But see, this is the first real conversation Peter's had with Jesus since before the crucifixion. Let me take you back in time to the last conversation and how it went. See, in the last conversation, last real conversation we have documented that Jesus had with Peter, they were sitting at a meal. They were having a meal together, much like they just had breakfast together, except this time they were having supper together. They were up in the upper room, and it was the time of the Passover. And Jesus broke the bread and said, "This is my body broken for you, that will be broken for you. This is my blood that will be shed for you." And at some point, Peter said, "Jesus, let me just tell you, man. I just want you to know, Jesus, that if all the rest of these guys bail on you, I won't do it. I am with you till the very, very, very end." In the last real conversation Jesus had with Peter, he said, "Peter, so I wish that were the case, but actually before morning gets here and before the rooster crows three times, or before the rooster crows in the morning, you'll deny me three times." Peter's like, "No, I won't, Lord. Though I die, I'm going to stay with you." They head off to after that, they head out to the garden, and Jesus gets arrested. Peter takes out a sword, cuts a guy's ear off. He's going to stand with Jesus, right? It's what he told him. "No matter what happens, I'm going with you." Peter takes the guy's ear, puts it back on. They drag Jesus off, and Peter and the rest of the disciples are terrified. And Peter runs. And in John, I think chapter 9, I'm not sure, might not be chapter 9. Don't quote me on that. But earlier in the book of John, it says that that Peter is hanging out with these men who are warming themselves by a charcoal fire. And one of them looks at Peter and says, "Hey, aren't you that guy that hung out with Jesus?" And Peter said, "I'm with you till the end." He says, "Man, that ain't me. That ain't me. I don't know the guy." Little servant girl says, I think you were with Jesus. And he curses her and says, wasn't me. 3 times he tells people, I don't know who Jesus is. And suddenly the rooster crows. And the rest of the world, the rest of that area just heard a rooster crow. But Peter heard the sound of guilt and shame. And one of the authors that tells us the story said that at the time the rooster crowed, Peter was actually within eyeshot of Jesus. And he actually glances over into the inner courts and he sees Jesus, who's been already arrested and beaten a little bit. He looks over and he hears the sound of guilt and the crowing of a rooster. And he sees the gaze of shame from Jesus. And that's the last real conversation that Peter had with Jesus, was you're going to let me down before morning. And he hears a rooster crow and he sees his friend that he swore he would never let down. And from that point till right now, I promise you, every morning that a rooster crowed, Peter was reminded of how he let down Jesus. He can't get it out of his mind. He just decides to go back fishing. And then days later, after the resurrection, I want to show you this verse again. This is what John says. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Remember I told you about the details just being uncanny? Well, interestingly enough, this word charcoal fire in the Greek is only mentioned twice, both by John, both in the book of John. Once here, and once when John tells us that there were some men standing around a charcoal fire and Peter with them. And they said to Peter, aren't you with that Jesus? And he said, no, that's not me. So let me tell you what Jesus did here. Jesus, who is God, who knows everything, nothing is unintentional, decides, you know what? I've got some unfinished business with Peter to do. And he goes out while they're fishing, and he begins to build a charcoal fire, because even that detail mattered. In fact, it mattered so much that John picked up on it. I mean, it's not even necessary to the story, right? It could have just said, and Jesus was out there and had built a fire and there was some fish. But no, he uses a very specific, a heap of coals is the exact translation. Because Jesus was intentional to take Peter back to the point of unfinished business. And when he gets him back there, he says, Peter, let's talk for a minute. And I don't know what Peter expected, but I bet you Peter was already thinking about the guilt and shame. And he knew he deserved condemnation. I mean, Jesus had every right to say to him, you let me down. Jesus had every right to go and seek justice and make things right and ask for restitution and demand an apology. I mean, what do we do when we're wronged by other people? Right? We demand for things to be made right, or we talk about them to our friends, or can you believe? But we expect some form of restitution. And we condemn usually. We give condemnation. It's like, this person really hurt me. I mean, we'll leave churches and leave neighborhoods and leave relationship all because somebody said something wrong. We automatically tend to lean toward condemnation and guilt and shame. I mean, we'll even fabricate in our minds. Next time I see them, I tell you what I'm going to do. We never do it. But that's what I'm going to tell you. What, I'm going to publicly shame them in front of everybody. Jesus goes, Peter, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to build a charcoal fire. I'm going to take Peter back to the moment of his worst memory. And when Jesus gets in there, he goes, hey, Peter, this question. Now, what question would we expect you to say? What were you thinking, Peter? How could you, Peter? Instead, he goes, hey, Peter, do you love me? Yeah, Lord, I do. And he restores him. Then feed my lambs, tend my lambs, feed my sheep. What is that? He says, hey, Peter, your purpose hasn't changed. Your calling hasn't changed. Yeah, but Peter let him down. Yeah, he did. And you know what? The most incredible part of the story is for Jesus to be able to offer restoration, he could only do it because of the cross. To say, Peter, you're forgiven, now go get about your purpose, meant he had to endure the cross, which he willingly did days before this. You see, the cross says, you're guilty, and now you're forgiven. And throughout this whole series, this is what we've been trying to communicate, is what can we learn from the unexpected things of Jesus? And here's what I want you to learn this morning. And we said we saved the best for last, because I think this is a remarkable thought that maybe this can change the pattern of your life. And this is it. Choose restoration, not condemnation. Let me tell you something. There's some people in your life right now, across this room, there's some people in your life that you have written off. There are people in your life that have hurt you and you've walked away from it. And listen, I'm not here to make light of your hurt. But if instead of condemnation and separation and pushing people away, listen, if you will embrace restoration, it'll surprise you what God does in your own life. Listen, some of you are holding on to bitterness and you're holding on to unforgiveness as though you are able to get them back. Let me just tell you something. Unforgiveness and bitterness is like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. It will rot you out from the inside. And listen, if they hurt you, they don't care about your bitterness anyway. But when we like Jesus, listen, no one has been hurt more than Jesus by our sin and by our mistakes and by our rebellion. But Jesus at the cross chose restoration, not condemnation. And those of us who follow him should do the same. The question I'd love for you to answer this morning and maybe go home and wrestle with is, who in my life do I need to seek restoration with? And let me just make you a promise. If that's an easy answer for you to do, you're probably not digging deep enough. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'll bet you it wasn't easy for Jesus. In fact, the cross says it was the most horrific thing ever. Now, maybe you're here. This is the way I want to wrap up. The band's going to start kind of making their way this way. This is the way I want to wrap up, with just your attention. Maybe you're here this morning, and you have never placed your faith in Jesus. What I mean by that is you have never come to a point where you just say, you know what, Lord, I'm going to trust what you did on the cross, that you did it for me. I'm going to place my faith in that. Listen, I want you to hear this. It's just me loving you enough to tell you the truth. You have two options in life, restoration or condemnation. Because we are all sinners and all fall short of God's glory, we deserve condemnation. And God will allow you to experience what condemnation looks like. What it looks like is an eternity spent in a place called hell that was not designed for you. It was designed for those who rebelled against God and didn't seek to be forgiven. And you can choose to be condemned, or this morning you can make a conscious decision to seek restoration. You say, how do I do that? It's by very simply expressing to God, I trust you. I put my hope in you. I put my confidence in you. I'm hedging my bets on you. So how do I do that, Matt? Well, with heads bowed all across the room, eyes closed, I just want to invite you. Maybe you're here and that's you. Just very simply to say this to God. God, I know you're listening because you're God. I ask you to hear my heart. I place my trust in you. I believe. What confidence I have, I put in you. Bible says those who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. And that's what you've just done. Now, here's the thing I want to ask you for. I don't ask you to raise a hand, but I would love to pray with you, pray for you, and talk to you about next steps. If you've prayed and invited Jesus into your life just now, and you've chosen restoration, not condemnation, you could stop by and just ask me on the way out, hey, can I have one of those books? We have a book that outlines next steps for you. Or you could take out the card you got when you came in. Give me a name, a phone number, one of our staff, maybe me, it could be it's whoever's in rotation, will give you a call this week. We'll have a conversation about your next steps. You know why I love this story? It's because this story reminds us that Jesus is always in the restoration business. Wherever you're at today, whatever you're going through, however you feel like you have failed, however you feel like you've let Jesus down, Jesus is always in the restoration business. Father, thank you.